Welcome to XY Files Podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlov, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 18 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered what to expect after starting treatment, realistic timelines, and monitoring. Today we're getting into long-term TRT management, what to expect. If you have listened through the whole series, this is the episode where the picture comes together. The first few weeks of treatment matter. The first month of labs matters. But the part that really shapes a man's outcome is what happens after the novelty wears off, after the first little boost in energy, after the prescription is no longer the main event. Long-term management is where good care separates itself from hormone tourism. The mistake I see almost every week is a man walking in focused on the treatment before anyone has properly defined the problem. He wants to know the dose, the timeline, whether he can build muscle faster, whether he can come off later. Fair questions. But if you have not established whether this is true hypogonadism, whether it is primary or secondary, whether it is functional and potentially reversible, or organic and usually permanent, then you are building a plan on fog. And this matters because low testosterone is not a number on a lab printout. It is a clinical syndrome. You need both persistent symptoms and biochemical deficiency. At Vidma, we use 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone as decision thresholds when symptoms persist. We want morning labs, ideally between 7 and 11 a.m. We want repeat testing, and we always want LH and FSH alongside testosterone, because without them, you cannot classify the condition correctly. A guy in his early 40s came in recently with what sounded like the usual story: brain fog, libido down, recovery terrible. He had one total testosterone value that another clinic called fine, and the conversation ended there. But his free testosterone, measured properly, was low. His LH and FSH were low normal. That is a different situation from a man with low testosterone and very high LH. Same symptom category, different biology. One may be a candidate for enclomiphene because the testes are still capable and the brain is under signaling. The other may have primary hypogonadism, where the testes are failing and replacement is what eventually fits. Same dashboard light, different engine problem. That distinction determines the long game. I said this in clinic not long ago, and I still think it's the cleanest way to put it. Long-term outcomes are driven less by the first prescription and more by the initial diagnosis. If you classify the condition correctly, monitor consistently, and choose a treatment that matches the biology, you keep more options open. That matters for symptoms. It matters for fertility. It matters for bone health, metabolic health, and whether you can ever come off treatment without crashing. We also need to be honest about prognosis. Men hear low testosterone and often think the main concern is sex drive or gym performance. Those are real quality of life issues, but they are not the whole story. Observational research has linked lower endogenous testosterone in men with higher all-cause mortality and higher cardiovascular risk. A systematic review in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism showed that lower testosterone tracked with worse survival. A study in heart found that in men with coronary disease, low testosterone was associated with earlier death. That does not prove testosterone alone caused every bad outcome. Medicine is rarely that neat. But it tells you untreated hypogonadism often travels with more cardiometabolic burden, frailty, and worse long-term health. Ignoring it is not a smart strategy. Now, who actually needs lifelong treatment and who may not? This is where the functional versus organic framework matters. Functional hypogonadism is the common real-world version. The HPG axis is intact, but it is being suppressed. Obesity, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, chronic sleep disruption, certain medications. Sometimes it is less dramatic than men expect. No tumor, no catastrophic gland failure, just a hormonal control system under chronic pressure, like a car that still runs but has been driving uphill with the parking brake half on.
When that is the picture, the outlook can improve if the suppressive factors improve. Weight loss can raise testosterone. Better sleep can help. Medication changes can help. Better insulin sensitivity can help. But I want to keep this realistic, not motivational poster material. The average testosterone increase from weight loss in the literature is modest, around 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter. And most lost weight tends to come back. Depending on the study, around 60 to 86% is regained within 3 years. In other words, lifestyle absolutely matters, but lifestyle alone is often not the cinematic ending men imagine. That is why, in secondary or functional hypogonadism with LH below 8 milli-international units per milliliter, enclomiphene is our first line approach. It works at the hypothalamus, blocks estrogen feedback there, increases GnRH and then LH, and stimulates the testes to produce testosterone naturally. The axis stays active. Spermatogenesis is generally preserved. Testicular size and function are maintained. Hematocrit risk is usually lower than with TRT, and if the underlying suppressive factors improve enough, discontinuation can be much cleaner, because you have not shut the system down from the outside. When I was younger in training, I used to think the smartest doctor was the one who could pick the strongest treatment fastest. I was wrong. The better question is, which treatment solves the problem while preserving future options? In a man with functional hypogonadism, starting with enclomiphene often does exactly that. Organic hypogonadism is different. If a man has Klinefelter syndrome, post-chemotherapy testicular failure, bilateral testicular injury, or another permanent cause of testicular failure, the conversation is not about restarting a healthy axis that has been suppressed. The tissue itself is damaged. High LH plus low testosterone tells you the brain is already stepping on the gas and the testes are not responding. In that setting, TRT is the replacement pathway in general endocrine practice. Not because it is trendy, because the biology leaves fewer alternatives. VIDMA does not prescribe TRT or injections, but it is still important that men understand where TRT actually belongs. It is reserved for documented hypogonadism, especially primary hypogonadism, or secondary hypogonadism that does not respond to enclomiphene. It is not for optimization. It is not for bodybuilding. It is not anti-aging for men with normal levels. One of the most common questions men ask is, can I stop later? Reasonable question. But stopping TRT and stopping enclomiphene are not equivalent. With TRT, you are giving testosterone from outside the body. That raises serum testosterone, yes, but it also suppresses LH and FSH through normal feedback. The Endocrine Society guideline is very clear about this. That suppression is expected physiology. The result is that spermatogenesis falls. Fertility can fall. The axis goes quiet. So if a man with primary hypogonadism stops TRT, he usually returns to the untreated hypogonadal state because the testes were never going to carry the load on their own. If a man with secondary or functional hypogonadism stops TRT, recovery can happen, partly happen, or take a long time. Some men bounce back, some do not. Some do, but not enough. That uncertainty is one reason we do not treat functional hypogonadism casually with a replacement strategy. With enclomiphene, the story is different. LH and FSH stay active, often rise, and the testes keep working during treatment. So if the underlying cause improves, a trial off therapy is often reasonable. If the underlying cause is still there, testosterone may fall again. But you have not added a second problem, which is recovering from TRT-induced suppression. In clinic, I often explain it like this. TRT is borrowing horsepower from outside the car. Enclomiphene is getting your own engine to rev normally again. Those are not the same maintenance plan. Now let's talk about what long-term management actually looks like, especially for men on TRT elsewhere and for men on hormone treatment more broadly. It never becomes hands-off. Ever. Hormones are not a set-it-and-forget-it appliance.
Long-term management means structured follow-up. Testosterone levels. Free testosterone, especially as men age and binding proteins rise. LH and FSH during diagnostic classification. Estradiol. CBC, because hematocrit matters. Comprehensive metabolic panel. Vitamin D. PSA, starting at age 40 and older. Insulin, when BMI is above 25. And when clinically indicated, lipid panel, prolactin, and thyroid testing with TSH.
At VIDMA, we check follow-up labs after the first month of treatment, then every 6 months. That is not bureaucracy. It is how you detect drift before it becomes a problem. Most routine labs still use immunoassays. We prioritize total testosterone by LC-MS/MS and free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS/MS. That matters because free testosterone is where hidden deficiency can show up, especially as men get older. Total testosterone can look acceptable while free testosterone is not. We do not rely on separate SHBG testing to guess the answer. We measure free testosterone directly. For men on TRT, hematocrit deserves special attention, especially in the first 3 to 12 months. It is the most common adverse effect. Once hematocrit starts pushing toward 54%, concern rises meaningfully. That is why any long-term testosterone conversation that does not include blood count monitoring is incomplete. And for men who are 40 and older, PSA and prostate surveillance need to be age-appropriate. The big randomized safety trial here is TRAVERSE, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. It followed about 5,200 men for an average of 33 months and found TRT was non-inferior to placebo for major cardiovascular events. That is reassuring. It also did not show an increased prostate cancer signal. But reassuring is not the same as carefree. Monitoring still matters. The same trial gives us another useful reminder. TRT is not a treatment for type 2 diabetes. Correcting hypogonadism may help body composition, energy, and some metabolic parameters in selected men, but testosterone alone does not prevent or treat diabetes. If a man's metabolic health is poor, he still needs the boring grown-up work of improving metabolic health. I say boring with affection. Most important medicine is not glamorous. Last month, I reviewed outside labs for a man in his 50s who had been told he was dialed in because his total testosterone looked good. He did not feel dialed in. He felt tired, flat, and mentally slow. He had gained abdominal fat, his sleep was poor, and his free testosterone had never been measured properly. Once you see this a few hundred times, you stop being impressed by isolated total testosterone numbers. Aging changes the whole environment. Men accumulate medications. Sleep apnea becomes more common. Diabetes shows up. Cardiovascular disease shows up, prostate symptoms show up, binding proteins rise. The plan that looked reasonable at 45 may be clumsy at 65. That is also why, if a man has therapeutic levels but does not feel better, the answer is not automatically more testosterone. Sometimes the diagnosis was wrong. Sometimes the free testosterone matters more than the total. Sometimes sleep is wrecking everything. Sometimes depression, thyroid disease, high prolactin, medication burden, alcohol, or untreated sleep apnea is the real drag on energy and libido. The T trials, also published in the New England Journal of Medicine, showed benefits in sexual function and some patient-reported outcomes in appropriately selected older men. Appropriately selected. That part matters. If the selection is wrong, the dose cannot save the logic. Lifestyle still matters after treatment starts. I know that sounds predictable, but it is clinically true, not just virtuous sounding. Resistance training improves body composition. Better sleep supports normal nocturnal hormone rhythms. Better nutrition improves insulin resistance and central adiposity. In functional hypogonadism, those changes can reduce ongoing suppression of the axis. and clomiphene can help a man feel well enough to make those changes while preserving fertility and natural signaling. That is a very different long-term strategy from going straight to a replacement pathway that shuts the axis down. A lot of guys hear all this and think, if I feel better, I must be fixed. Not necessarily. Symptom relief is good. We want that. But long-term care is also about durability. Are symptoms staying controlled? Is fertility still important? Is hematocrit stable? Is PSA appropriate for age? Has weight changed? Did a new medication enter the picture? Has sleep apnea been addressed? Living with low testosterone is not a one-time decision. It is an ongoing relationship with biology, which is occasionally rude enough to change the rules on you. A few common mistakes are worth calling out directly.
The first is diagnosing low testosterone from symptoms alone, or from one random lab draw. Fatigue and low motivation are common. So are poor sleep, stress, depression, overtraining, and eating like a college sophomore. None of those make every man hypogonadal. You need persistent symptoms and biochemical deficiency. You also need LH and FSH. Without them, you cannot tell primary from secondary hypogonadism, and if you cannot classify it, you cannot choose the right treatment. The second mistake is thinking all low testosterone leads to lifelong treatment. Some men absolutely need long-term therapy, especially with organic primary hypogonadism. But many men with functional hypogonadism do not need to be locked into the same plan forever. If the underlying suppressive factors improve, testosterone may improve. That is one reason enclomiphene is such a useful first-line option when LH is below 8 and the testes are intact. It preserves optionality. The third mistake is treating TRT and enclomiphene as interchangeable. They are not. One suppresses LH, FSH, and spermatogenesis. The other stimulates endogenous production and usually preserves fertility. If fertility matters, or if the goal is to keep open the possibility of coming off therapy later, that difference is not small, it is central. The fourth mistake is relaxing monitoring once symptoms improve. I understand the temptation. Men feel better, life gets busy, and lab follow-up starts to seem optional. It is not. The most common adverse effect of TRT is elevated hematocrit. That often shows up early. Prostate surveillance still matters when age appropriate. Cardiometabolic risk still matters. Bone density matters in men with severe or prolonged hypogonadism. If treatment is real, monitoring has to be real too. And one more, because this one wastes a lot of time. If a man is not improving, do not assume he just needs more. More is not a diagnosis. Reassess the whole picture. Was the original testing done correctly? Were free testosterone, LH, and FSH measured? Is this really hypogonadism, or is something else driving the symptoms? Sometimes the smartest move in hormone care is not escalation, it is humility. So, if you take only a few practical points from this episode, keep these. First, make sure the diagnosis is real. That means persistent symptoms, repeat morning testing, total testosterone and direct free testosterone, and always LH and FSH. A low number alone is not enough. Second, ask what kind of hypogonadism this is. High LH plus low testosterone points to primary hypogonadism. Low or normal LH plus low testosterone points to secondary hypogonadism. Functional suppression and organic failure are not the same problem. Third, if you have secondary or functional hypogonadism and LH is below 8, enclomiphene is usually the best first-line place to start. It works with the body's own regulation, preserves fertility, maintains testicular function, and gives you a cleaner path to reassessment later. TRT is generally reserved for primary hypogonadism
or for secondary hypogonadism that does not respond to enclomiphene. Fourth, commit to monitoring. First month follow-up, then every 6 months. Testosterone, free testosterone, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, estradiol, PSA when age appropriate, vitamin D, and other labs when clinically indicated. That is how long-term care stays safe and useful. And fifth, keep working the boring fundamentals. Lift weights. Sleep like it matters because it does. Improve metabolic health. Review medications. Hormone therapy works better when the rest of your physiology is not fighting it. That wraps up our low testosterone series. If you missed any episodes, go back to episode 1 and listen through. It all builds on itself. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free or order labs through our special offer at VIDMA.com.